Welcome to the Inner Fight Endurance Podcast.
Cable slack.
We're good.
A couple of mic issues that we're slowly resolving.
Slowly. Have it done by week four.
Weather issues, mate, today.
I have no weather issues. None. It's raining and sometimes it rains.
I love this new weather in Dubai.
It added some volume to our track session because we could not run in lane one, two, part of lane three.
Partially three.
And some of four in sections.
Now, I saw the weather report come in yesterday and I thought to myself, well, in past when it's been dry track and there's been some sprinklers on, the Rocket X's have slipped a bit on the track. So I was like, there's only one thing to do. Tecton X2, you've going on.
Trail. I thought you were joking and I looked down at your feet. No, no, you were wearing trail shoes to a track session.
Carbon trail shoes
to a track session. I stuck with the Rocket X and I feel like actually in big puddles, they work very well also. So maybe it's just that middle ground where it's slightly wet, they're not so good.
Yeah.
If it's 4 to 5 millimeters of standing water, fantastic.
Fantastic. Fair enough.
Yeah.
I was very happy with the Tecton X2. Also, they will be the shoe I'm using in Greece, Xterra.
So
today was just a beautiful Xterra training day.
Excellent. Yeah. And I know people will wonder, why are we moaning about the rain? Well, we're not moaning, but it's not necessarily the rain. It's the fact that the rain does not drain.
No.
We are not set up for the drainage.
It's an issue.
Which is the issue.
Yeah. But if you don't live in Dubai, so you don't know what it's like when it rains here, then you have no idea.
Everything shuts down.
Everything shuts.
Except Track Tuesday, which remains constant.
Government buildings and schools were closed. However, track was open.
Was on. They even put the lights for us, which was very nice for the horizontal rain at 5 a.m. Good.
Two important birthday shout outs. One today, Rob Foster. We welcome you to your middle of your 30s. And Precision Fueling and Hydration. It was their birthday yesterday. Now, you didn't see that one coming, did you?
I did, actually. I saw the reel they put out with balloons and things.
Yeah, yeah. And they are also, because of that, offering, I think it's a competition, to win some sweat tests all around the world. Because they have places all around the world that you can get your sweat tested. So head over to their socials at Precision F&H and you can enter to potentially get your sweat tested, which is actually quite an interesting test to do. You find out whether you're a heavy, salty sweater and how much sweat you lose in roughly an hour, but it's more to the point of your concentration of the sweat, so how much salt you are losing when you do sweat. And then they have a full range of salt-filling products to help
you. Salt-filling products.
Salty products.
Have you ever had your sweat tested?
No.
No.
Just high, because it stings my eyes.
Yeah. I've only ever done, I remember it was probably COVID summer. I did a 1 hour easy run, weigh yourself before, weigh yourself after.
I've done that, sweat volume.
And that shocked me how much I lost in an hour of running.
I did that, I think it was 1.2 litres an hour.
I think, I was close to 2 kilos, so 2 litres.
Yeah.
Heavy sweater.
Heavy sweat.
I'm sweating now, just sitting here.
So in our Kipton special long run last Friday, how much did you drink?
Not enough, to be honest. Really not enough. I didn't come with any bottles, but when we stopped at I actually snuck off. I tried to catch you up, so you put an effort in. Our Kipton special, we're running 1 hour, 59 minutes for Kelvin Kipton. And it was meant to be an easy run, but you decided...
It was easy for the first hour.
Easy for the first hour.
And then we said step it up in the second.
Okay, you stepped it up quite a lot.
Yeah, well, I was running a 10K effort.
I was behind
race-based training,
trying to make up a deficit because I'd filmed a video for Skinny. Like, this is not working. Why am I not getting any closer? If anything, you're getting further away. So I peeled off to stop at the water cooler.
But I saw you running the opposite way over the bridge.
That's because I realized, actually, you'd gone over the bridge. I thought, if I turn right and stay on the right-hand side of the canal, I can head you off.
Yeah.
Because there's only one bridge you could come back on. So I was tactical.
Yeah.
I knew that way was shorter. Then you ran off anyway.
Yeah, you didn't U-banger and come with me. I was waving my Salomon cup around, but no one was willing to fill it up.
I don't know why you bring that. Just
for convenience, mate. When I stop at water cooler, just
carry 150 ml with you. For how long?
No, it's not for carrying it. It's just for enjoyment of sipping at water coolers. One of my favorite games is finding the best water coolers. I found another one on the beach track right. on the weekend. Ice cold water, but it's a bit off the beaten track, so you have to know where it is.
Which is your favorite water cooler? This is post and send an email with your favorite water cooler and the pin location, and we will go rate and review your water cooler for you.
You're on for it, man.
That is a new segue. Rate my water cooler.
Wow. Actually, I'm into that. I'm into that.
Let's do it. What have we got today?
Today, mate, is an interesting story. We have Skinny on.
Skinny. Okay, Rob Foster.
Rob Foster, birthday boy. To talk about an actual real life case study of taking someone from spin bike to Ironman, which is not uncommon that we see, but I think the way he managed to do it with this person is a lot to be learned from it lesson wise. And I think the main bit is you can be high intensity fit, hit fit, where you're on a spin bike maybe 4 or 5 days a week. Maybe you're going to some classes, but basically you're always on that 1 hour class mark. So anything beyond an hour you might struggle with.
Peloton conditioned.
How you go from that to being able to exercise through an Ironman, which I think the first one this lady did was maybe close to 14, 15 hours of moving time. How you get your head around even just changing out, you know, your frame of reference for exercising for that long after you've been used to the 1 hour mark is really, really interesting. And as you'll hear, it's not always about the numbers and the science behind it. It's about actually understanding whether you're enjoying what you're doing. And I'll let Skinny talk you through the rest.
Excellent.
We have, before we start, you have a guest next week.
Yes.
And we have another one. So we have, someone say
I have a guest. Then
Sophie.
Yes, Sophie.
She's doing 36 marathons.
36 consecutive marathons in 36 consecutive days, starting with London, ending with London Marathon, ending with Edinburgh Marathon.
Oof.
So when this show comes out, she will be, well, she'll have started. She starts this Sunday.
So that'll be next week. Then we have a nutrition special with Abby Coleman, who you might remember.
She's back. I like the nutrition specials.
Used to work for Precision. Now she is with a company called Edge HPL. And she comes on to chat a little bit more around nutrition within lifestyle, specifically for endurance athletes. It's a really, really good show. So that's what's coming up. And then we will be having some Marathon de Saab specials, ITD specials. Lots is coming. If you know of a guest or would like to be a guest, you have something good to say, fun to say, then let us know, endurancein-a-fight.com, and we will happily vet you to see if you can come on.
Also, actually, on this, if you're worried that maybe you don't have a story that could take 45 minutes to an hour.
We'll get one out of you.
Well, either that, or if you think your story is worthy of 5, 10, 15, 20 minutes, that's absolutely fine as well.
Yeah.
It might be a short but powerful story.
There you go.
We can definitely do short and powerful podcasts.
High horsepower,
exactly. That's it.
There you go. Let's go into it.
Skinny, here we go.
The original Kenboy, welcome.
Welcome.
Mate, do you want to explain where Kenboy came from, just to start off?
Just to give people some idea when we say Kenboy coaching. Kenboy is still there, a man, coach, a legend, who has no coaching experience and was given to us as a coach. Ian couldn't make the session, so he just set us up with Kenboy, who apparently knows quite a lot of people in a 10, Kenya. And he walked up to this group of people, random group of runners who had no idea who he was, really, apart from some bloke, and no idea who we were. We didn't know him. And then he briefed the session. And we were sold. We were, from that moment on, he was our coach.
Yeah.
Because he did it so well. He never seen a blag like it. He introduced us to the runners who he didn't know and the coach that he didn't know. He introduced us, who he didn't know, to the runners that he didn't know, and then said, "Are you ready to run?" and did a big speech. And we said,
"It's Monday.
It's Monday. We are
time to work.
Time to work. Will you?" Well, he he asked a set of runners that he didn't know if they would welcome us, who he didn't know as well. So we nobody knew each other. And then we went off to the forest and got our legs ripped off.
He's a master networker.
He is a master.
And we didn't know he wasn't a coach at all.
At all.
Of this group that we were running with until 4 days in.
Yeah, until we spoke to Ian and he said... And also then he arranged a track session for us. And he took us to track.
And he wrote down the splits from our watch, which saves to our training peaks in his notebook.
And which is just brand new notebook. But the best bit was beforehand when he just started pottering off to other groups at track to see if we could join in their session.
That's when we realised he wasn't a coach, wasn't it?
And that's when you just sodded it and did the normal track Tuesday set.
That's it. I got
Marcus
annoyed, didn't I?
Just ran because he was cooked. And I got put with another guy called Kenboy.
Yes.
He was a 800 meter runner in the US and he was far too fast for me.
That was it.
That was
I forgot about that.
What a day.
That's when we realised he's not a coach. Yeah. And I went, I've had enough of this.
your threshold was hit. And then, he wrote down my splits and then repeated them back to me at the end of the session and said how good it was.
Off the wahoo.
Off the wahoo, which is incorrect, of course.
Good. Well, that explains Kenboy.
And he'll forever be my coach, my head coach.
Yeah, he will.
He has actually had a coach in the fight endurance.
Yeah, he does take care of test athlete pretty well.
He's the boy.
Kenboycoaching.com if you want to go there.
Mate, nothing.
You wrote an article...
Ages ago.
A while ago, last year?
Yeah, would have been.
Called Spin Bike to Iron Man.
Terrible name. Apologies.
Is it?
It's not good.
It's a good name, I think.
It's not clickbait, is it?
And in this article, you laid out the pathway for someone who is maybe on a spin bike or is going to spin classes, but replace spin classes with anything cardio class based, should we say, or 1 hour of, let's say, hit that area to something that's almost polar opposite, which would be an Ironman.
Yeah.
And the journey that it took, the principles that you used along the way, and, that's what we're going to talk about today.
That is what we're going to talk about today.
No, and you did this in real life. You've not made this up. This is a real Kenboy coaching
Natalie
moment.
Natalie is a real person.
Real person.
I was actually a coach. I didn't just rock up to an Ironman and assign myself to some random person at the start line. No, it happened. And it happens all the time in our line of work, is where we take somebody from a beginner level and we coach them through up to something that they never thought was actually possible. And
yeah, but that's couch to 5K really, isn't it? But this is a little bit different in that if you're doing spin every week, and we're picking on spin here, not in a bad way, but you're not unfit.
No.
But you are not specifically fit for something like an Ironman. And there's a lot of background you have to unpick and change, which you're going to go through. But I think it's not a case of like, if you're listening and you're not doing anything at all, thinking, all right, I can go and get to do an Ironman, because that's almost giving you a clear runway. It's like you're fit in one way, but now you have to kind of change your fitness in a whole another way, which is common for us, but not as common as from nothing. Not from zero to hero. That's pretty common.
That's common, yeah. But from active to specifically active, and then just the different... The connotations around the word specifically changes throughout the whole progression of their whole like athletic background and current. So it just totally has to morph as it goes on.
And where had you done this before? Like, for example, when you were working in Athlete Lab or before that, have you ever taken someone else from?
Yeah, I've done that for quite a few people. There was one lassie called Claire Pepper, which is my first,
I remember that name,
triathlete who I did well with in terms of coaching experience.
Yeah.
And she was active, so she was a cyclist, just recreational. Found us through some like one of those little apps that you get and you get like free trials places. Mm. It's cool. And then she started coming more regularly to Athlete Ab. She's now shut down.
RIP Athlete Ab.
Hagger ran past it yesterday.
Wits closed down as well now. Remember that, Jim?
Has it?
Yeah.
Gone. Oh. Anyway, we digress. So she was fit, and then we had to get her to a challenge 70.3 distance. And it was the turning what was fitness, which was bike fitness or spin fitness, into a triathlete, which was swimming, which is strength, which is running when she didn't really like running that much. And it was a really cool experience. So it was like, yeah, it's been done before.
Eating, recovering,
and understanding like just cumulative load and what it does to your body and how one session will affect the other sessions. If you absolutely kill yourself, and it's diversifying that education, I suppose.
Yeah. Where do we begin?
I don't know. I've got my little my essentials written down.
Yeah.
Because I reread the article. It's been a while since I've read it.
Makes two of us.
It comes down to the first essential was the essentials and education. And how you phrase things and how you actually start the conversation of what is a triathlon or what is an X, Y, or Z. And it's about gauging their understanding of what they are currently doing and their historical athletic background, and then how to educate that person to understand what it means to do a swim, a bike, and a run, and what things are important within that. And that involves a lot of questions, a lot of sometimes I answer things badly because I'm answering to somebody who I expect to have this level of knowledge and it's not, or I explain things wrong or in a way that person doesn't absorb.
Right.
So it's about getting that the way you educate. How do you educate? Are you a visual learner? Are you a doer? Are you a listener, thinker, and then potter off and do it yourself? Mm. Or are you a handholder? And it's all about judging that, and then the level of education, it starts really basic.
Yeah.
So only give the absolute vital information, and then it's what is that person listening to and what they're taking on.
But what is the information that you're trying to deliver to the person who's coming from 1 hour a day, let's say, to helping them understand what it takes to complete what we're saying Ironman here, but you're saying actually the start is sprint triathlon or triathlon. Yeah. What are you trying to feed information to them based on what?
Initially, it's what is endurance? It comes back to as simple as that.
Okay.
It's what does your body need to do to be able to go for X amount of time? What systems are at play and how are you affecting them on a session by session level?
Okay.
So Watton's physiology, but very basic. The word aerobic gets used a lot.
Aero.
And what does that mean? How does that feel?
So someone who is hip fit. What's the difference between hip fit and triathlon fit?
Specific fit.
Which is?
They're built for purpose. So if you look at the discipline, you've got a swim, a bike, and a run. You have to be able to do all three efficiently.
Yeah.
And then you have to be able to fuel that. And you have to be able to produce enough energy to work at a certain level based on your goals to complete it.
Mm.
So it's not an hour and then it's done. It's not walk out and have a great time. It's you need to be able to complete and get to a finish line, but you need to be able to produce enough energy aerobically to complete an activity. I think it's, honestly, I don't think there's much more basic than that, and I don't think it needs to be. I'm just trying to impart the fact that their system is, it's not off on, it's a consistent effort.
Yeah,
it's relative to them and only them, and they have to be able to complete all three and fuel it.
What about the education of triathlon being, and it doesn't have to be, but more often than not it is quite a lonely sport, and when you're in the water swimming, there's no music distraction. Similar with riding, similar with running, whereas exercise through classes is, you're coming in, there's an instructor telling you what to do the whole time. There's not much autonomy there. It's being directed what to do. There's music to motivate you. There's other people around you for accountability. Do you think about that side of education as well?
Yeah. Being in a, finding out answers for yourself and getting used to situations that you're not used to being in. So a long 2-hour ride, for example, when you've never done more than an hour without music blasting in your ear, it's a big thing. But we are, in essence, the spin instructor, really. We're stepping back. We're not blasting music or shouting, start to lift your 2 kg dumbbells, but we're saying, put yourself in that situation. You've got a 2-hour ride. You need to ride at what you feel is a moderate level to begin with. And then it's up to them to figure some stuff out. You give them markers and you allow an open space for conversation about questions, but it's all about going into the unknown and being okay with it. And autonomy is to have somebody who can do that and feels empowered to do that. It's what also we're interested in.
We're going to come to mental toughness based on your article order, which makes me, the cue for that was you said being okay with the unknown. So we're going to come to that. But what are, for in a more practical term, the expectations of the athlete wanting to go from spin bike to Ironman? Do we just enter an Ironman in 6 weeks' time? What's the timeline expectations? What are the training expectations? Like, how do they look?
How long is a bit of string?
Double half its length.
Asking the questions. Well, if you read the article, you would. There was never a discussion about Ironman initially.
Yeah.
There's, like you said before, there's triathlon. There's a skill you haven't done before. There's a discipline you haven't done before. And the timeline is absolutely subjective as to your availability as a person and your life.
Okay.
So you can't say book in for an Ironman in a year's time because we'll be ready for it. You could probably get ready.
It's what most people do, isn't it?
Yeah, but why would you put yourself under that stress?
Because they need a goal to aim towards.
Yeah, but then that's the way people do it, and that's how they fall out of love with it because it's not a sustainable way to do things. Going jumping and then putting these big, big markers in your diary that scare the living hell out of you and you're not ready for.
Mm.
Why would I say to somebody, oh, you're absolutely ready for that?
So how do you create some expectations based off not having tangible goals into the diary straight away?
Initially, we create goals that we both agree. Like, if, for example, if you've never ridden for more than 2 hours outdoors, then that's a fantastic goal to start with because it's absolutely attainable. It's within your control and it's actually a really big marker for somebody who's never done that before. So that should scare enough. And also create an environment where they can go out and do an hour and a half and feel absolutely rubbish and finish anyway, like do an hour and a half, which was meant to be 2, and it's okay. But it's pitching to that person and creating a system that works for them and where they're at. You can't just say Ironman or sprint triathlon in 6 weeks. It just doesn't work. You need to first gauge where you are and then set some goals off that. So if somebody came to me, and said, I do some strength training like boxing and I do spin classes. And they go, okay, but I want to do a triathlon. You don't automatically say, okay, let's sign up for one.
Yeah.
You say, let's first figure out where you're at in terms of the three disciplines, understand what we need to do in order to get you ready to enjoy it. And then then you ask the question, what do you think you need to do?
Let's say someone does their first 2-hour ride and then they say, if I was to do an Ironman, how long would it take me? How do you answer that? Knowing in your head, it's probably looking like 6-7 hours.
A lot longer. Be honest. Like, don't fluff it.
And then how do you explain that that's actually possible for them? They've just ridden 2 hours and they're absolutely cooked after it.
You look at empirical evidence from previous training to get them to 2 hours point. So it's just the same, right? So if the person's been an hour max by them in a gym where they're really not working hard on a spin bike and then just lifting weights, and then they're doing a 2-hour ride like 4 weeks later and they go, oh, I don't know how I could ever do an Ironman ride.
Yeah.
Look what you've just done along the way and what got you there. Was it the consistency? Was it turning up and like changing a bit of your routine to allow you to get an extra one session a week in? And what did it feel like? And that's going to be exactly the same for an Ironman bike, but you're just going to be able to go longer because your capacity's increased. Like, and then look at the evidence base, look at what you have done to get to that new point, and then say it's just a matter of steps, and you just got to keep, as Marcus loves to say, adding to the layer cake.
The layer cake. So all goals really then are built around adding to the layer cake.
Yeah, I would say so. It's like, yeah, it's just adding and adding and adding. And then you use what you've done before. So it's not you just idly add to the layer cake. You have to, that, let's talk cakes.
Here we go.
So, I don't know cakes. But if you create a bit of Victoria sponge, right?
Oh,
right.
I mean, I don't know cakes either, to be honest, unless it's carrot cake from Lime Tree.
All right, we'll go to carrot cake later in a second.
Okay, good.
So if you create a layer of carrot cake.
Yeah.
And you have to put these ingredients to get it.
Yeah.
To get to a sprint triathlon. Let's use that.
Okay.
Okay, that is not going to be the same as the layers you need to do further away, right? So as you develop as an athlete and the layers get more complex, then the ingredients get a bit more complex and the ratios of that ingredients change to make your perfect layered cake.
There you go.
It's not just a case of adding the same nonsense on top of the other nonsense. It's not nonsense, by the way. It's good training. But it's being specific with those layers and identifying within that space what it is actually you need to do to improve. So if you have 10 hours a week and you make your Victoria sponge and then you really get to the top of that Victoria sponge, you've absolutely nailed it. So you've got the perfect layer. And then you go, okay, I've still only got 10 hours a week, but what do I need to do to improve to possibly get me carrot cake from Lime Tree or me gatto from Miss Trunchbull? So you go in and you're identifying within that space what it is that you're doing. You're actually changing. So it's not just repetition, it's smart repetition and changing the stimulus as you go up.
Okay. This ties into one of your next points in it, which is continual feedback.
Mm.
So tasting the cake, if you like.
Oh, go on. Yeah. Go on for this one there.
But that has to be one of the most important parts, which is why you've put it that in the article. But and what you've said there, which was so, I think, good for people to hear, is like, it's not about looking at going, oh my God, it's going to take me 6 hours to ride. I've just ridden two. How am I going to get there? It's going, well, look how you got from one to two. Exactly. Don't look at how you're going to get from two to six, two to three, three to four, four to five. But how, from a continual feedback point then, how do you keep reinforcing that lesson time after time after time?
That's just consistency, isn't it? In terms of feedback, it's important, I think, to have various different voices coming. So my voice is my voice, but also my TP typing voice is sometimes completely, you can't read it.
Can't read it.
No, but it comes from a different side. So you talk about your coaching hats. That consistency of Training Peaks feedback and like metrics that are reinforced, so heart rate data, RPE data, how did it feel, getting them to reflect on what they've done, gives them a real, like a switch, so they can't look forward because they're all like, you're getting them to reflect and analyze how they felt. And that sort of continuous feedback through like whatever you use as a feedback channel, initially that's your coach feedback, and then you're there with somebody. So you're able to feedback to them in real life.
Yeah.
Like if you have like three touch points with somebody a week where you're able to be there and then you say, oh, look at that. And that was your like 4:30 pace or 4:45 pace. And you did that last week. How did that feel? Then you get a different method to express how things felt and how you're doing and how you're looking in terms of form. And then you've got another one. You can go like video feedback in terms of feedback. So you can look at someone's run form or cycling form or swim form, and you can then mark it as little datas, and then by then you create a real nice system of them being able to go back and have a look at their terrible swim form or their horrible knee lift, and then look at bit by bit improving. So it gives evidence to what they've done is getting better, and it will continue to get a bit if it keeps going. I think the consistency of feedback needs to focus on a couple of things as to how it felt, what they felt resulted in. And then when it does go wrong or right, it's what made it wrong or right. So creating a consistent feedback form.
And I guess as well, it's a lot different coming out of a HIIT session. You don't really put feedback into anything. You just go and grab your, what is it, a matcha latte or a smoothie or something, and then crack on with the day. Whereas finishing a 2-hour ride and writing out some feedback of how you feel, it's probably quite a difference in itself.
It's a training session, and getting people to think about what they've done is actually, that's a hard thing to do initially. Because you're right, you're like coming out of a little spin set and you're blasted and your face.
You're always feeling dead, right? Or cooked. That's your idea of a good session, isn't
yeah.
it? But so how do you, go back to education here, how do you educate the person going from cooking themselves every session to Ironman? How do you educate them around RPE for that?
Exposure to different varieties of effort and then reflecting on it continually.
And what is the RPE you're looking for in an Ironman? Or I know you don't want to go down, we've put an Ironman in the diary, but for triathlon, how do you coach that from an RPE? Because when you're really bad at swimming at the start, it feels like a 10 out of 10.
Everything's a 10, right? It's still 10 for me. I haven't got in the pool last
Never week. Ever seen you swim, to be honest.
It's like a duck. Duck out of water, pal. Yeah, it's about, if you take that 2-hour ride, we keep going back to that, and then we, could you foresee yourself going longer with that? And it's difficult because now we have so many metrics to go by, but metrics are only good in the reflection phase, not necessarily initially in the actual actioning phase. So if you were really good at cycling and you went, oh, that was easy, that felt like a 4 out of 10, like if 4 is based off your max 10K effort time trial, that's your 10 or your FTP or whatever you want to use as a metric, and then you base it off that. But then a 4 out of 10 would result in a much faster time than, say, a 4 out of 10 in the swim. But it's about relaying what they have and their knowledge base already, and then translating that into other disciplines and trying to relate it to a feeling. So it's a bit of, I've forgotten the word, but a bit of diffusion. So if you have your experience of going max out in a HIIT class, for example, that's a great place to start, because we don't want that at all. We want a third of that and consistent health for longer. So therefore, you've got your first marker, and then you can go into the testing phase where you figure out what person's capabilities are, and then you relay that to a feeling. Like, could you see yourself going for there forever? And a lot of people say, oh, no, I didn't try hard enough. Try again. See how far you can push yourself, and that's your 10. And then you get them in a long run, for example, and you say, okay, run it a 5. And then they go, oh, yeah, it was definitely a 5. And you say, oh, yeah, that's good. But your heart rate was the same as when you did your max 20-minute effort. So how is that a 5? What were you using as the marker for that? And then they go, oh, I don't know, I just try to beat the person in front of me. It's not that then, is it?
Yeah.
It's, you use the data and you use like stats like heart rate and thingy to help reinforce if they, you don't think they're getting RPE, and use it as a check-in. And then you use whatever markers you have along the way. So our benchmark sessions, they're great for allowing somebody to see what a 4 or 5 on the bike feels like, which you could say, oh, that's going to be your Ironman RPE.
Yeah.
If it's your first one, for example, because you're not going to be walking the line. You're going you're going to have as much buffer zone as possible.
Yeah.
It's, yeah. Yeah, I think
and
that.
Do you think the Ironman highlight reels are a bit misleading in terms of what you get when you're signing up for it? Because the majority of an Ironman day, you should be cruising along. There's no pain cave. There's no breaking down barriers. That only comes at the end, hopefully.
Yeah, but why would you sign up one like a year away after doing a spin class that you're fully dopamined up from? You want to feel and be sold something that you think is going to be the same.
Mm.
But actually, yeah, it's solitary confinement basically all day. Well, it should be if you're not drafting anyway.
Yeah, yeah. Which comes back, I guess, to expectations when you're sat down with the athlete, actually getting them to realize like you're going to be in a pool for an hour or 10, an hour and a half in your training sessions. Are you cool with that?
Yeah, I mean, that's when you go back to ask them, yeah, what do you think you need to do to be able to do an Ironman? What do you currently know about the sport? What do you currently expect your day to look like? And what do you expect your training week to look like?
Christian Blumenfels.
How does it look? Just you could try to do it spin sessions only. That'd be an interesting one in Birkenstocks. But yeah, it's
with the nature of Ironman training, which is a lot of training hours relative to someone who is spin biking a lot, inevitably things are going to go wrong. How do we tackle things when things go wrong? Which is going to happen.
It's going to happen, 100%. Things go wrong all the time. And things don't fall into place exactly as you want them. So if you're a perfectionist, you need to be perfect with what you can do. But it's about creating a setup where, I think I write this, but it's like failure isn't a thing. You can't really fail at anything if you learn from it.
Yeah.
It's a learning environment. It's a developing environment because it's rich with learning. So everything you do and everything you make a mistake on, it's not the end of the world. It's not a nightmare. It's, okay, how will I change it so this doesn't happen again? So you've got a big bag of balls, which is your controllables, and you have no idea what they are and how to control them. And they all just bounce sporadically.
Right.
But eventually, once you start to make mistakes and throw it one way, it just didn't go, then you can learn from that and move forward. And then you also, as a coach, I like to set people up to sometimes two things to go wrong.
Mm.
Like, for example, you went to talk about autonomy, somebody like figuring stuff out for themselves. You can go, once the person's at a level where they're happy to throw themselves in and confident that you've given them enough tools, to go for a 4-hour ride, make it hilly, let me know how it goes. Yeah. Make it 5 RPE. Go. And then just wait for the answer.
Yeah, right.
So you create situations where they have to learn,
yeah,
that you're enabling them to learn, and they don't feel or fear if things go wrong. Because they do.
Some people more than others, right?
Yes.
A lot more. So let's just do a bit of a recap. Spin back to Ironman, we've hooked you in, if you're listening to that.
Yep.
The first place to start is to think triathlon.
Yeah.
Swim, bike, run. Do you enjoy it?
Do you enjoy it?
Do you see yourself enjoying more of the training to come over longer race distances? The expectations is where having a coach comes in and being a professional who can help you figure out what your training day, life, week, diary can look like. Mm. And then understanding what's expected of you in order to achieve where it is that you want to go, and creating goals based off where you want to go as well.
Yeah.
Continual feedback, like you said, mate, is very important, but that's a two-way street.
Oh, 100%. If you're not getting anything back, or you're not engaged, if the athlete isn't engaged, it's so difficult to guide and be a coach.
So feedback, actually, for the person who is the HIIT trainer, feedback takes feeling, which sometimes we use high intensity, or people use high intensity training in order to not feel. We're actually pulling them in another way and saying, we need you to now start feeling.
Yeah.
Telling us how sessions went, learning what the RPE guide is, being able to feedback on that, understanding, or from your side, understanding data points and how that correlates over to different sides of RPE as well. Yeah. And then understanding that failing is inevitable. It's if you're going from 5 hours a week of jumping on a spin bike or into a class or whatever to 10 hours a week or 15 hours a week, you've doubled your chance, even tripled your chance of failing.
Plus, what are the markers of success and failure in a spin class? There are none.
Yeah.
But within
good
a
selfie.
I mean, we can all do that AI now, innit?
True.
But within a week of 10 to 12 hours, you've got multiple new stimulus, especially when starting out, that if you attempted 9 times out of 10, you might fail. Unless given good guidance, and it comes down to about 7. But things aren't going to be perfect, and they are exceptionally difficult to get perfect, but it's just the expectation of time that'll take to get it right.
And in the, based on this example, give us some timelines. What were the timelines of?
2 years.
To an Ironman.
To an Ironman. Spinning. From a spin bike, yeah. And then about 4 months to the first sprint try. Actually, no, I tell a lie. Natalie had already entered a chuffing sprint, so I had to just get her ready as best as I could. And so then it
went against your methodology.
Well, I'd already signed up. And then, I think so. It was a long time ago. It's when I first got to Dubai.
Yeah.
And then from there, it was, okay, what do we do next? Do you enjoy it? I think what you said, mate, and I think that's a very... it's just sparked a little brain wave in my head.
Here we go.
It's... If you are... What do you get out of the sport? So triathlon is a very time and admin demanding sport. Very ad... Like, that's the biggest realization ever. Is the
and finance.
And finance. Yeah, and finance. So there's a lot of input needed in order to get your output. But if you don't enjoy it and you're only doing it to satisfy external, like, I'm changing my life for the better.
Instagram.
Instagram. Not so much these days. It's all dying.
It's all LinkedIn now.
But if you're doing it for the wrong reasons and the input is far outweighs the output and actually the enjoyment isn't there and you're just having a bit of a yarn with yourself and a bit of a lie to yourself, then it's never going to, you're never going to get to that Ironman, really.
Yeah.
Because the time and the effort and the dedication that it involves is quantifiable. You have to change a lot about your life in order to do it well and to do it in a way that satisfies whatever objective it is you want to get out of it. So to, you have to think about that. So after the first sprint try, it's like, do you enjoy it? Did you have fun? Are you willing to put this much effort in? And what is it giving to your life apart from the finish line? What does it do to you as a person that's going to improve you and keep you locked in terms of, is triathlon something that gives me joy, makes me happy, and also makes me a better person? Or is it a slog that you feel is a necessary thing to keep you on level?
Do you think people become better people going from spin bike to Ironman, or like you said, that girl in the lab that you first coached, do people generally become better people, do you think?
Depends what you define as better people. I think if they want to better themselves and they see something that triathlon brings out in that, so a bit more discipline, like knowing your feelings and being more reflective of how you react and
self-aware,
how you deal with strange and possible scary situations and overcoming that and coming out the other side smelling of roses. I think there's a lot of things you can learn, and it's not just in triathlon, it's endurance, it's in sport and life really. But in that setup you are, and if you aspire to be like that, if you're not happy in your current situation and you think that that's going to help you, maybe. And typically the skills and the tools you learn along the way can resonate across your whole life. So people, you've had it loads, we've all had it as coaches, and somebody comes to us and they say, I want to run, I want to do a triathlon, and then they come back 6 months later and they've done it and you've got them through that process, and it's not actually the triathlon that's the best part. It wasn't the event they wanted that they put their hopes on, that's been the big dopamine rush. Yeah. It's the realizing that their way of life and their choices because of triathlon actually helped them be a lot happier overall.
Mm. Do you think that's a lot of what you described there, the components come to mental resilience, which is a term we use a lot, but basically being able to cope with different situations at unpredictable times, let's say.
Yeah.
Do you think that's what the power that an Ironman can bring to someone is, because you are going to exercise for anywhere from 8 hours, let's say, for the best or amateurs, up to 17 hours for the last person. So much can happen in that one day that you've put so much work into, that if you're not mentally resilient, then you probably won't even get to the start line, but you definitely won't get to the finish line.
Exactly, yeah. And then it's always a reference point for later on. I got through this. What did I do then? And it's a positive affirmation of what you can actually do when you put your mind to it. Hmm. You overcome, yeah. 100% mental resilience is the one of the biggest takeaways from a long distance triathlon or an ultra run or something that really requires you to endure.
What are the negatives to it?
I think there are very few negatives if you go in with a realistic expectation of what it is that you have to do. This is the thing. If people go in and they expect to be amazing in 5 minutes, they're going to be disappointed and they're going to hate it. Yeah. So it's not like but you go in and you know what it is and you're willing to commit it and you know, roughly speaking, what you need to do and you're being guided in a very productive way. The negatives of that can make any, I mean, the only thing that screams in my head is that nothing is harder than an Ironman, which is a real stupid thing to say in my opinion. Sorry, Instagram or whatever. I think it is a daft thing to say. It dumbs down the appreciation for what it is to run a 5K really fast.
Yeah.
And it also discredits the mental resilience that you need for that.
Yeah.
Because there ain't nothing hiding in a 5K or 800 meters. That's arguably one of the most psychologically tasking things if you do it to the highest level out there.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah, you can sometimes think, oh, it's easy. Done an Ironman. Nonsense. In any situation.
Yeah.
A bit right. Like a bit too much bravado.
Will you ever do an Ironman?
Oh, I think it might grab me at some point, but I'm not quite sure. I'd like to do one once I want to do one. Because at the minute, I don't want to do one.
You never have.
Nah. It's never spoken to me fully. I absolutely appreciate the sport and I love it for what it does and the complexities and just how to crack it.
Yeah.
It's so cool. There's so many different facets you can play with to make somebody better.
Yeah.
And I love seeing that happen. I just don't want to put myself in that situation yet.
If you could go back to the 1978 when they first came up with the Ironman order, would you change it?
Cool off and swim. Nah, it's good. Suffering at the end of the run's good.
Do you think? I often wonder what it would be like to run first, bike, and swim last.
I don't know. It would be better. It would be like the swim to finish is... Would it be easier?
Be more deaths.
Lost at sea.
If you think how it feels in ITD to finish the run and then get on your bike... The mental component, we always associate crossing a running finish line with finishing.
Yeah. But going onto the bike, oh, that would mess us up just because we're so conditioned to it.
Yeah. Often wonder what it would be like to try an Ironman in that way. Marathon, bike, swim last.
That's something I could buy into. That'd be banging.
Maybe we should do it.
Rackman part two.
Yeah. Good. If you are currently sat on a spin bike listening and you're thinking Ironman, start thinking triathlon first.
Yeah, please. I was gonna shout you down there.
But also think Rob Foster in a fight. Come and have a chat. Maybe he can help you. Or he'll help you to help yourself. There you go. Oh, you like that better, don't you?
I like that. That's much better.
And yeah, if you're wondering, maybe hopefully this show gives you an idea into what it takes. And if you tick a lot of the boxes or you'd like to tick a lot of the boxes that we spoke about, then why not give it a go?
Give it a nudge. It's still booming. It's still a great sport to get into. Give it a go. See what happens.
You see your mate Lionel Sanders won Oceanside 7.3. And his run form's not changed a bit.
No, not one bit. I saw him there. I saw the finish line. He looked horrific. But
he's the spin bike to Ironman.
Yeah.
Like,
top lad.
When he ran track in high school. Then he became addicted to drugs. Then he started just hammering himself with exercise, and then slowly developed into this Ironman 7.3 winning champion.
Mental resilience not to go back to drugs, right?
Completely, completely mental resilience. Yeah,
he knows how to hit himself.
Incredible.
It's class.
Yeah, good. Thank you, mate.
Thank you.
We'll have you back on soon, maybe to chat about being a dad.
Easy. That's going to be a whole new kettle of worms.
Iron Man to fatherhood.
We'll fatherhood to Iron Man to get out of the house.
Also an option. Awesome. Thank you, mate. If you want to get in touch with Rob Foster, you can do at Kenboy Coaching, rf@innerfight.com or re_Foster on Instagram. RE Foster?
Yeah, something like that.
Bobcam88.
If you search that, you'll probably find me as well. The OG.
rfinnerfight.com is where you need to go. And if you have more questions for us, you can send them in endurance@innerfight.com. Or you can find me on the Instagram, Tom Walker Fitness, or email tw@innerfight.com. Thank you very
LinkedIn,
much.
LinkedIn, come on, don't.
Or LinkedIn, Tom Walker Fitness. Welcome.
Welcome.